welcome to the podcast that will be told over six acts and an epilogue, Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is a young dancer just trying to make it in this cruel, witch-filled world.
Mike DiCrescio.
How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing great. It's an interesting connection and parallel to draw to that one character in Halloween and my new character on this podcast now, I guess, where I just want to dance, Dad. Stop taking me hunting. I just want to dance.
That was a long walk to get there, but I'm glad you went there.
You're welcome.
Also joining us is a guy who's basically our honorary third member of the podcast at this point, Vin Craig. Thanks for joining us once again on Film Bookcast.
Oh, my God, you are too kind. I'm happy to be back this episode having, you know, the last episode I did was Venom. And this episode, this movie, in a way, can also be described as Knock, Knock, Let the Devil In.
That's a good point. That's a
interesting.
Very good point.
I stumbled that.
No, but that was a good
to get there. But I was happy we did.
Yes, this is the episode of calling back to other episodes in very long.
As is every episode.
I was going to say
that I am on.
Well, every episode we do is just a callback to the last joke, so it'll be fine.
Yeah, so that's fair. It should work out. If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, I assume you're very lost at this point. But first, we start with some film news and then move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. Today, Vin, of course, will be joining us. After that, we move on into our featured review. This week, we are discussing the latest film from director Luca Guadagnino, his remake of Dario Argento's horror classic Suspiria. Now, we almost didn't end up reviewing this movie, Mike, correct?
Yeah, would have been a travesty.
That would have been a travesty. We were going to do Bohemian Rhapsody, but we were both like kind of on the fence about it because it's like, we've heard mixed things and you know, all that stuff. But I didn't.
A couple of Freddie Mercury purists over here.
Yeah. I would like to consider myself that, actually, yes. But if they couldn't reanimate his corpse to play him in the movie, then I don't want to see it, all right?
Then what's the point?
Oh, my God.
But I wasn't sure that Suspiria was going to be playing near me in time to review it, but luckily it was in the indie theater right next to my house, the Roxy, so that worked out. And then, Vin, you contacted us on Twitter 2 days ago saying, like, dudes, are you reviewing Suspiria? Because we got to talk about it.
As every time I've been on the show, I begged.
Yes.
You got a good track record so far.
Yeah,
I do,
definitely.
Bat in a thousand.
All right, so we're gonna talk about Suspiria in a little while. First, we're going to get into some film news. All right, it's time for some film news here in Film Bookcast, and we begin with some very sad news. And Mike, this is news that you actually broke to me when it happened. So why don't you tell what it is?
So recently, I think a week or two ago, Filmstruck, a beloved streaming service for deep film nerds across the internet, it's partnered with Turner Classic Movies and the Criterion Collection. So basically, you get all those dope black and white classic movies that everyone loves. However, in a couple weeks, it's shutting down. They were like, yeah, we're going to just not do this anymore. And I'm very sad about it.
Yeah.
So buy now.
Yes.
If you're going to invest in the company, do it now.
It could turn around. You never know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so on November 29th, Filmstruck is shutting its doors for good. It's been around for about 2 years, and I'm very upset about it, A, because I just got Filmstruck.
Oh, no, you took my advice.
Yeah, no, well, I didn't buy my own thing. I started using Mike's password.
Yeah, we're sharing it.
Filmstruck.
Oh, so that's why it's going
on. That's probably
that's
why.
It.
But this is really upsetting. I mean, when I left New York and moved to Montana, you know, I had to get a new cable package, and my cable package didn't include TCM. And I had TCM when I was in New York, so I didn't have Filmstruck, because I was like, well, I have all these movies just on TCM, I can DVR them and whatever. And now Filmstruck had all the TCM movies, it had all the Criterion Collection movies, and it had the entire Warner Archive, too. It had a lot of stuff, and it was so, like, beautifully curated. There were special features, and there was, like, host introductions and stuff like that. They had, you know, they had, like, different collections that, like, when A Star Is Born came out, they had, like, all three other versions of A Star Is Born were available on the site and that kind of thing. And, like, it was very, like, beautifully curated and organized, and it was just a great, it was a great service. And as movie geeks, we were all about Filmstruck, and it's a bummer for sure. And a lot of the other big thing about this is a lot of the movies that are on Filmstruck were not available on DVD or Blu-ray or anything like that. So it's possible these movies might just get lost like forever, or unless they get picked up by another streaming service, which could happen. It seems like Warner Brothers is probably is trying to launch their own thing, which will have probably a lot of the movies that were on Filmstruck and put it on there. But I don't know. It's very upsetting news all around for film geeks. I think anyway.
Where does the Criterion Collection come from? Like, what is that associated with the studio?
The Criterion, no, it's its own thing. It's its own like kind of boutique label.
Yeah,
but
so
we all learned.
My favorite part about Filmstruck was that they, since it was the Criterion stuff, and a big thing about that Criterion is that it's like collector's edition, and they usually have a lot of documentaries and commentary tracks and all that stuff, and they would include that in the streaming service. So like, you can go on and watch.
Oh, sick.
Like watch. Oh man, I forgot what's the movie. The Long Goodbye.
Long Goodbye.
Like the director commentary on it, and like you can watch all that stuff. And because I remember doing that for a while when I watched that movie. it's going to be a shame to lose this kind of niche classic film streaming service.
Yeah, definitely. So we want to just kind of pour one out for Filmstruck. Very upset about it. But now let's move on, guys, from that into some TV news. And I wanted to bring this up. A couple of significant shows are happening. We talked about Game of Thrones a lot in the past. The final season coming up in 2019. But HBO is already gearing beyond the final Game of Thrones season because they want to keep that train rolling. And we talked a while ago about how they're going to do a Game of Thrones prequel show. And I think, Vin, you might have been on the podcast when we talked about that, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I don't...
Statistically, of your guests, yes, it probably was me.
Yeah, that makes sense. But anyway, yeah, so this prequel will be taking place like thousands and thousands of years before the events of the actual Game of Thrones show. And now we have a star for this Game of Thrones prequel. Naomi Watts is going to be the star of this Game of Thrones show. And I was kind of surprised to hear that. That's a huge get, I think, for this show. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm on board. I'm like, sure, why not?
Yeah.
big fan of Naomi Watts. I feel like she looks alarmingly similar to Lena Headey as Cersei.
You think so?
I might be thinking of Nicole Kidman. It could go either way. I'm just like,
you're just thinking of blonde Australian actresses.
I really am. It's a very niche market.
Just all the time, but now it's relevant.
So. Yeah, that's true. They're in high demand, and there's only three of them. No. Oh, no, that's a wrestler. Never mind. Yeah, three of them.
If only there was a female Hemsworth, you know?
Oh, my God. Or if they just cast Chris Hemsworth as the female lead in Game of Thrones.
But he's just Thor.
He's just doing Thor. He's just doing Thor, but, like, in a dress.
I'm in.
I love it.
You know,
just Thor. Yeah. I think that is an astute observation, Vin. I didn't even put that together, that she's probably, I was going to say Targaryen, but not Targaryen.
She's got Lannister.
Lannister, there we go. That's
yeah, could be. But again, this one takes place thousands of years before the current show. So who knows? This could be like this whole separate thing just happens to be in the universe of Game of Thrones. I don't know. Maybe she's a White Walker. We'll see what happens.
So now as opposing to people not believing in the White Walkers, people just won't know what they are. So I'm not that excited about this, you guys. I'm sorry. It seems like it's going to be the same show.
Honestly,
just with different character names.
I agree with you, but I'll watch it because it's an HBO Game of Thrones show. It's like it's gonna.
I mean, I'm gonna watch it. I'm not gonna be happy about it though, until I'm wrong.
I'm just gonna be sitting there pouting the entire time. But
you know what show is definitely gonna fill your Game of Thrones void after that show ends?
What show?
Amazon's billion-dollar Young Aragorn show.
Oh,
you can forget about that.
Yes, true.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
What?
Awesome.
Oh, really? Yeah, no, Amazon's putting a lot of money towards the Lord of the Rings show, and it was recently revealed that it's going to be about young Aragorn.
I'm kind of glad they're not just rehashing the movies.
It's going to be Riverdale, but with Aragorn.
Riverdale with Aragorn. Oh, man, that actually sounds great. I'm down for that.
Did you say Riverdale and Aragorn?
Yeah,
yes.
Riverdale and Aragorn.
Oh, that's amazing.
all right, let's move on from the Game of Thrones thing. I have one other TV news that I want to talk about. We talked about Disney's new streaming service recently and about how they're starting up these Marvel TV shows. They've already got one lined up for Scarlet Witch, which apparently Vision might also be in. And they've got one lined up for Loki as well. And now there's another Disney Play show that's coming, Falcon and Winter Soldier. And that's going to be one show. They're like a buddy duo in this show. And I gotta say, I'm down for that. What about you guys?
That's like the buddy cop drama or buddy comedy cop. I can't. How do words? You know what I'm trying to say?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but with Falcon. the Avengers that I've always didn't know I wanted.
You're spending a lot of time fan casting other shows with Avengers in this episode, I feel.
Do you not, though?
Yeah, is that not? You've seen I have that thing like with the newspapers and the strings, but it's all fan castings. It's taking up most of my home now. I got to really rethink my situation.
Yeah. Now, do you guys think Falcon and Winter Soldier are like compelling enough characters to justify like a 6 or 8 episode show for this Disney streaming service?
Based on the source material, yes. Based on the movies we've seen so far, I don't know, but I don't think that matters because now like this will go into the real meat of the characters.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if it was just one of them, I wouldn't be as excited for it. Especially if it was like a Winter Soldier show, I'd be like, pass.
Yeah.
But but if it's like the two of them together, like I think Sebastian Stan has described it as like a Midnight Run-esque type deal, and like I'm down for that. I think that could be a cool thing. Especially, but what kind of surprised me the most about this that they're announcing the show, and presumably. Like, one of these characters, like, the long-standing fan theory is that after Chris Evans leaves the Marvel Universe with Avengers 4 next year, one of these guys is going to be the new Captain America. But if they're getting their own show after these Avengers movies come out, as Falcon and Winter Soldier, then, like, that...
It's Captain's America.
Captain's America.
Maybe. It's just both of them. Or they're in one suit, like, in a stuck-on-you situation.
What if it's a Voltron? Of, like, a Voltron.
But it's just like they do the whole transformation sequence, but just one of them hops on the other one's back is effectively what happens.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe it's like a reality show, like America's Next Top Captain America, where they're both trying out to be Captain Americans.
I'm in. Oh. It's that one short, the Team Thor short, where Thor goes on summer vacation.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, so anyway, that is the next Marvel Disney show. So they've already got like quite a bit of shows lined up for some of these supporting Marvel characters. Which I think is kind of cool, you know, if they can explore some of these characters that are kind of beloved through these movies, but that aren't, like, beloved enough to get their own movies.
And all dead at the moment.
And all currently dead at the moment, yes.
So, you know, whatever that means.
Yeah. Did Scarlet Witch die at the end of Infinity War?
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
She did?
Yeah,
she did.
Okay. Dust.
Okay, then yeah, all these characters are dead at the moment, and presumably they're going to stay dead. These will all be prequels.
That's definitely how it's going to go.
Yeah, exactly. That. We're never seeing another Black Panther or Spider-Man movie again, guys. I don't know what you're talking about.
Nope.
Anyway, let's move on from the Marvel news and go on to this other thing, which is really crazy. A very long-awaited sequel, sort of, by some, I guess. Ridley Scott, director of such films as Alien, Blade Runner, and Gladiator, is lining up to direct Gladiator 2. The Gladiatoring, or whatever.
It's just gladiators, but with a dollar sign next to it.
Yes. So, yeah, Gladiator 2. Is this a movie that you guys ever thought would ever come to exist?
Oh, boy. No. Definitely.
I remember reading about, I can't remember if it was a, like, abandoned script for Gladiator 2 or the original ending for Gladiator, where, like, he goes through time.
That is, like that is the abandoned script of Gladiator 2. It was written by Nick Cave, the musician.
Okay,
it's a real thing.
Amazing.
And yeah, so they're not using that script, apparently.
Like, you sure?
That's already been confirmed. I know.
Seems so rock solid.
Yeah. In that script, like Maximus, like, you know, he's dead at the end of Gladiator, right? And he like goes through like hell and heaven. And he goes through time and space. It's like a fucking insane thing. And I really wish that was the one that Ridley Scott was doing. But instead, this is about like the nephew of a character from the first movie who's like inspired by Maximus or something, something along those lines. Like whatever. I don't know. I think I'm tentatively excited about this. Like I think Gladiator's pretty good. I got nothing against Gladiator. And Ridley Scott's recently made it like. Part of his career to do long delayed sequels to his movies. I mean, he returned to Alien with Prometheus and Alien Covenant. He produced Blade Runner 2049. So, you know, we'll see what happens, I guess.
Why not?
Based on 2049, I'm
but it's not going to be directed by Denny Villeneuve.
So, who or who is not? never mind. I'm gonna abandon this. Just pull the plug. Pull the plug on this joke.
It does sound like Ridley Scott is planning on directing this himself, which, you know, he did Alien. I liked Alien Covenant quite a bit, actually. And Mike, I know you did too, actually. So, you know, who knows?
I liked the part where they had the Fassbender smooch.
That was the best part of the movie,
I watched that on loop.
I've never stopped watching it.
It's playing on my TV right now, I swear to God.
Anyway, so that is some Gladiator 2 news, and I guess we'll have more on that as it becomes available. But yeah, that's going to be something. It's weird, for sure. And then finally, got one last bit of film news. This just broke today, and I had to save it for last, because, Mike, we've been talking about this movie for fucking ever.
I can't believe it's real. I can't believe this is happening.
So a Despicable Me producer is going to be has been hired by Universal to figure out how to reboot Shrek and the Puss in Boots franchise, but he wants to keep the same voice cast, so it doesn't
Shrek 5, baby.
Yeah, it does not sound like it's a reboot. It sounds like it's fucking Shrek 5.
Oh my
coming
god,
in hot.
I'm so happy that we're revisiting the Shrek CU.
Yes. I can't wait. I mean, when this movie comes out, if it comes out, because they're still working on the details and stuff, and who knows if the voice cast will actually come back. I think if they're given enough money, they probably will. But at the same time, Cameron Diaz is supposedly retired, but she hasn't been in a movie in like since 2014. Mike Myers is effectively retired, although he was just in Bohemian Rhapsody. I don't know if you guys heard about that, but he was in that movie.
Yes. So I think he also confirmed that Austin Powers 4 is like in the works.
He's been saying that. He's been saying that since Austin Powers 3, though. Like, that's...
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a Bill and Ted's thing, where even though that's actually happening, though.
Well, but Bill and Ted is the one that I actually want to see. But that's
yes, I mean, that's fair.
But yeah, Shrek 5, Mike. It feels like it's taken so long for us to get here because I think we talked about this like 2 years ago or something.
It's got to be one of our first episodes.
It was so long ago, and like when we first talked about it, I think it was because they had announced that like Shrek 5's coming out on this date or whatever, and then nothing ever happened with that. And then actually our friend Nick Wormuth, who was just on the podcast 2 weeks ago for our Halloween episode, he just pointed us to a Twitter account that's a countdown to when Shrek 5 is released. And we both followed that account.
Was it counting up? I don't understand. How does that work?
Well, it was counting down to like a date next year, and I was like, man, there's no way Shrek 5's coming out next year.
That was low-key Mike Myers' Twitter.
It's definitely him.
What if they just surprise release Shrek 5 and the internet goes fucking insane? Oh,
it's the next Cloverfield movie.
Oh my god.
They just announced it 3 months later, it's out.
Shrek was the Cloverfield monster all along.
It's just Cloverfield 1, but with Shrek superimposed over the monster.
I'd watch
I want nothing more in this life than that right now.
It's just Shrek as, or John Goodman as Shrek in 10 Cloverfield.
But anyway, so yeah, Shrek 5 or a Shrek reboot or whatever it is in the works right now. So we wanted to, we got to report all Shrek news as it comes your way at this point.
It's your number one source for Shrek news.
Exactly. And when
the
movie comes...
We have been the Shrek book cast.
And when the movie comes out, we should do, like, a full episode, like, looking back on the entire Shrek series. I think we should call it a Shrek-trospective.
How long have you been sitting on that?
Way too long.
What were some of the takes that didn't make the final cut of the joke?
I'm so down for a Shrek-trospective.
A Shrek-membrance. No, that's not good enough.
A Night to Shrek member? That doesn't make sense.
Oh, man.
But anyway, yeah, so that's Shrek 5. Hopefully there's a new version of All-Star in the works. We'll see what happens. But let's move on. Yeah, that was a big like moment for you, Vin, I feel like. It was,
yeah, because I was trying to remember what the other song they redid was. And I can't. We talked about it in one of the movies recently. We were talking about like a movie coming out where Top Gun. Oh.
Oh, Danger Zone. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. What they should do is they should do Danger Zone for Shrek 5 and All-Star for Top Gun 2.
But every time they say Danger Zone, All-Star plays.
Yeah.
You remember those memes?
That should be the movie where every time somebody says Shrek or something, the entirety of the original Shrek plays. but it gets like 0.5% faster every time.
I'm in.
Anyway, let's move on from film news and get into our discussions starting right now.
Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, let's get into our discussions for Film Bookcast starting right now. Vin, you're the guest here. What do you have to discuss for us today?
Very cinematic. Not a movie technically, but I've been watching The Hill House.
What if I have a bad dream?
Oh, I'm
sure we can handle any dream you have.
What if I dream that you sent us away into the dark and we get hurt? Really hurt? And what if I'm so sad and scared of the dark out there that I put poison in me for years and years until my blood turns into poison and my heart breaks right in half and I can't feel anything happy?
It's not a movie, it is a TV show.
But no, it's very, it's weird because it's shot like a movie. It's very cinematic in a way that, well, I guess TV's been doing that for a while now with, like, your Game of Throneses and stuff like that. But it's, there's just, the character development is so incredible in that show. It's a harrowing family drama as much as it is a horror-like piece. It works, I think, for the same reasons Hereditary does, in that the scares are kind of, like, banking on you being so devoted to these characters. And it pays off so well. It's 8 episodes. It's such a quick watch. Or is it 10 episodes? No, I think it's 8 episodes. Either way, it's so good. It's very spooky.
Let's split the difference and say 9 episodes.
Let's call it 9 episodes. And if it's only 8, call Netflix and demand the 9th episode. it's just this incredible show. The cast is amazing. You have this breakout star who plays... I'm just going to look it up real quick, her name. Not the character. The character's name is Theodora. She's, like, the middle daughter, and she is so incredible. She looks like Angelina Jolie, but, like, without all the weird, like, brother love stuff.
But is it really Angelina Jolie without that?
True.
No, that's fair. That's 100% fair. So it is a woman by the name of Kate Siegel, who co-wrote Gerald's Game for Netflix and was also in the movie Hush.
Okay. Yes, well, that's the thing. This movie, Haunting of Hill House, is directed by Mike Flanagan. Every episode he's directed, I think.
Yeah.
And I've been a big champion of him on this podcast for a long time, so I've been meaning to watch this show, and I haven't yet. But he directed Hush. He directed Gerald's Game.
And he married Kate Siegel. I swear to God, in real life, 100%.
So there's that, too. Yeah.
Look at that.
And I've been a big fan of this guy for a while. He also did Oculus, and he did Ouija, Origin of Evil, which
is the good
way
one.
Better. Yeah, the way better than it had any right to be. Like, it's the fucking Ouija sequel. How could that be good? But it was amazing.
Nice.
He's somebody who I've been a big fan of for a long time, and this seems like his most high-profile, like, biggest, like, breakout hit to date yet. Like, I feel like everybody's been watching this, or at least I've been seeing a lot of people on Twitter watching it and stuff like that. Haunting of Hill House. It sounds awesome. I look forward to watching it. And actually, he's directing Dr. Sleep next, which is the sequel to...
Yeah.
To The Shining.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
What?
Did you not know about this?
I feel like I heard that, and then I, like, didn't process it, because that sentence just blew my mind.
It makes no sense.
There's, a very, not a loose sequel, because it's about Danny Torrance in the future.
Right.
Well, I guess in present time.
All right. From the movie Future.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Stephen King wrote a sequel to The Shining a few years ago called Dr. Sleep, and Mike Flanagan is making it into a movie. So I'm very excited to see what he can do there, because, he's awesome, and he's already had success doing a Stephen King property or Gerald's Game. Haunting of Hill House, it's a Netflix original right now. I plan on watching it very soon. Have not done so yet, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It's incredible.
All right, and Mike, what do you got to discuss today?
I have another Netflix original, a very light week for Vin and I. But this one is Castlevania Season 2.
My generals, in killing my wife,
please!
Humanity has proven to me that they don't deserve the Earth. We will scour them off the land.
My father, he's gone mad. And now he's going to destroy the world.
And this is a anime show that came out, season one came out last year, and it was a smash hit for Netflix, I think, at least amongst that subset of Twitter users.
At least amongst you, I think, is what you're trying to say.
No, that's not true, because they put out a season two. And also announced a season three already, which is, they did that for the show both times, where the day they released the current season, they announced, like, oh, big shock, the next season's coming out. finger guns.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, cool.
I've never seen anybody talk about the show other than you on this podcast before.
Really? Well, then strap in, because your boy's seen it too.
Kiddo.
But yeah, tell me more about it.
It is more of the same from season one, which is a very dark, bloody, gory, gothic with a capital G, like as in the time period, anime about Trevor Belmont, a vampire hunter fighting Dracula in fake Transylvania, basically.
Right.
Season one ended where, like, you know, Dracula's castle reappears or something like that, and this is the war between humans and vampires, basically. And it's badass. It's great. Like, you know, big, dark alchemy, you know, mystery stuff going on.
Burning women who, you know, just are helping people.
Yeah, like witch doctors, quote unquote, which are really just, here's medicine. you know, like the church did.
Right.
And this is, oh man, I forget who's involved. Vin, do you remember, is it like Warren Ellis or something like that? It's some big comic writer is involved in the writing of this show.
I think it was Warren Ellis. I feel like, I mean, you talked about this when season one came out, and I'm pretty sure I remember talking about Warren Ellis that time.
Yeah,
so.
I don't remember if he wrote this season or produced this season, but he's still involved in some capacity. Richard Armitage, who was Thorin Oakenshield in The Hobbit, does the voice for the lead. And this season they added, oh man, something Stromier? I can't remember. Oh, man, what's
Peter
his name?
Stormare.
Peter Stormare?
Yes.
I was that, like, hype when I saw that.
That Eastern European dude from every movie.
Right.
He's one of the voices in this, and he's just doing himself, and it's really funny. Because it
He's not even trying to hide it.
Yeah. But it's great. It works for his character. So, and it's only 8 episodes. They're like 25 minutes each or whatever for, you know, what a typical animated episode is. So, yeah, check it out if you like season one, if you like very graphic, violent, adult anime stuff.
Okay, cool. That's Castlevania Season 2, and that's also on Netflix right now. And I did not have a light week. I have 5 movies to talk about today.
Whoa.
Today, yeah.
That was unexpected.
Is it 5 movies and a season? Did you do it? I don't understand.
Yeah, no. I got 5 movies. I actually had a lot more movies I could talk about, but I'm sticking to the ones that just came out this year. The 2018 movies I've seen. The first of which is The Sisters Brothers.
What's wrong with you?
You know what happened last night?
Yes. And?
You remember that you hit me?
I hit you? I hit you?
Stop pretending and spare me the I don't remember routine. You hit me in public, Charlie. So as sure as you're looking at me right now, I'm leaving.
No, wait. All right, what do you want?
It's about slapping each other in public.
After I slap you, you slap me back, raven.
So go ahead. Hit me. Hit me.
Jesus Christ. What is your goddamn problem?
Which is the new movie directed by Jacques Odiard, who did A Prophet, which was nominated for a bunch of Oscars a few years ago. And this is a Western with performances from John C. Reilly, Joaquin Phoenix, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Riz Ahmed. Have you guys seen anything about this movie?
Yeah, I was surprised just because I'd seen the poster. And that's all I know about this movie.
Yeah, I saw a trailer or two. But
okay. Yeah, I mean, I feel like the trailer is advertised as more of like a kind of a Western comedy, kind of played up the comedic bits. And there's some fun banter between John C. Reilly and Joaquin Phoenix, but this is like a pretty dark movie. But it's a really, like, I think a pretty compelling one. It's pretty well shot. It's like entertaining and fits and starts. And I think it all comes together by the end. I don't think it's great, but I think it's a pretty enjoyable movie. I liked it, but it's not for everybody, I think. I think a lot of people will walk into it and think it's slow paced or something like that. But I think if you just enjoy Westerns and if you enjoy these actors, I think you're going to have fun with this movie. So that is The Sisters Brothers. And then I saw the directorial debut of cinematic auteur Jonah Hill.
God damn it.
Jonah Hill directed a movie called Mid-90s, which just came out. And this is a coming-of-age story about a preteen who starts hanging out with some older skateboarding kids. I think it's like semi-autobiographical. Like it's kind of sort of about Jonah Hill's own life. And, you know, I really enjoyed the first half of this movie. It's like just when he's just hanging out with the kids and they're goofing off and being idiots. And, you know, I think that's fun. And then the second half of this movie, like, the movie feels the need to just throw conflict in, right? And it doesn't, like, it feels very, like, fabricated almost. And then by the end, like, I kind of just ended up hating all the kids in the movie.
Just Isn't the there way a kid in the movie named Fuck Shit?
Yes, there's a character in the movie named Fuck Shit. He's an enjoyable character. I liked Fuck Shit until like towards the end when he kind of becomes a Fuck Shit. But and then the movie kind of just like ends, like it kind of just like it acts like it wrapped everything up, but it didn't. And then it just cuts the credits.
Yeah, one movie's allowed to do that. It's called Clerks. It came out in '94.
Well, but Clerks. Well, yeah, and I could see mid-90s sort of being influenced by movies like Clerks, because a lot of it is just people hanging around and talking. But it's, like, Clerks, I feel like, is different, because Clerks feels like the arc is complete, in a way. You know, there's stuff that's still all over the place, like the girlfriend's in the hospital, and, like, one just broke up with Dante. But, like, you know, the arc of that movie and that day, like, it's complete. It just kind of ends. It just kind of is over. And then it's like, all right. And like, I was shocked when the credits rolled, because I was like, how can there not be more movie?
Is it that thing they make fun of in the Oh Hello thing, where they're like, at the end of every play, the guy's like, waiter, make that 2 Pepsis. And then like, the curtain closes, like as if it's profound.
It's not as profound as that, I will say.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, yeah, so that is mid-90s, and I think it's a relatively enjoyable movie. I think it's a solid debut for Jonah Hill. I just think it's weird that, like, Jonah Hill has become, like, this artiste in a weird sense. You know, like, because he's the kid from Superbad. And I think he's done a pretty good job of, like breaking out of that and doing different comedy stuff. And, you know, he's nominated for Oscars a couple of times. And it's like, holy shit, how did that happen, Jonah Hill?
Yeah.
Do you know, like, how he got his start?
I'm not sure. How did he get a start?
Crazy. Who's the guy that directed I Heart Huckabees?
That was David O. Russell.
David O. Russell. Oh, God. And who's the man in that? Who's the older guy in that movie?
I haven't seen it. I don't know.
Jonah Hill was friends. I want to say it's Dustin Hoffman. Oh, is it Dustin Hoffman? It might
be. It might be, yeah.
Jonah Hill was friends with Dustin Hoffman's son. And one day, Jonah Hill had a bunch of like prank phone calls recorded that he had made. And he played them for the kid and, like, Dustin Hoffman. And, like, Dustin Hoffman brought him to David O. Russell.
Just off that?
Yeah, and they filmed scenes for I Heart Huckabees with Jonah Hill that, like, ended up getting cut out. But that's, like, how he got his start. He would call up hotels and be like, hi, I'm Tobey Maguire's manager. We have certain requests. We want to make sure that the room can accommodate a live octopus. And just stuff like that. And that's, like, how he got famous.
That's pretty great. So the key to getting famous is to be friends with people who are also famous and prank call people.
That is the moral of the story, yes. Be a dick and know famous people.
Anyway, so that is mid-90s, still in theaters right now. I also saw a movie called Destination Wedding. And this is a movie that I saw the trailer for like 3 months ago, and I was actually pretty hyped for, because just the idea of these two actors together for this movie just seemed great to me. It's Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder, and it's those two play two people who are stuck together at a destination wedding where neither one knows anybody else, but they hate everybody and each other, and it's just them talking for 90 minutes.
Does it ever cut?
I mean, yeah, there's like, you know, there's different scenes and stuff, but there's a lot of long takes of just them just like talking, having a back and forth. It's basically Before Sunrise, but for people who can't stand each other. And I was hoping to like love this. Like I saw the trailer and I was like, this seems like right up my alley. And I didn't love it, but I found it a pretty enjoyable time. If you like Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder, and like who doesn't, like the best, and if you like them together and just have them bickering back and forth for 90 minutes, then yeah, it's a good time. So I would recommend Destination Wedding for anybody who just needs like a pleasant time waster. That's the movie for you.
Does he fight people in this movie?
Nope.
I don't understand. Are you saying Keanu Reeves just talks? Is that like people are
the assassins?
Yeah, and he talks a lot in this movie too. Like, it's a lot of like conversation, a lot of back and forth. He gets a lot of like the elaborate insults. Actually, like he goes real deep into the sentence structures and stuff, things that you wouldn't expect Keanu Reeves to go into. So, Destination Wedding is available on Amazon Prime right now. If anybody wants to check it out, and then I saw another movie called Ghost Stories, which is a British horror anthology movie featuring Martin Freeman. And I'm not sure how I feel about the ending of this movie, and I think the movie spends way too much time on its framing device, but the actual horror shorts that are in this movie, there are three of them, they're really solid. Like, they're really, really good horror shorts. And this is actually based on a stage play, and Vin, you said you've seen the stage play before, that performed in London?
I did, yeah. When I was in London a couple years back, I one night, me and a couple friends, just, like, we had a free night, so we bought tickets to it. And I, at the time, did not handle horror well. And we sat in the front row, and I, my, like, everybody, like, muscle in my body was tensed for the full, like, 2 hour run of the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And it has, like, the vignettes and stuff in the short,
yeah,
in the play?
It's just like the vignettes. It's got the same framing device.
Interesting.
It's one of those things where it's, I feel like in the show on the stage, they broadcasted, like, the ending,
yeah,
a little bit. So I don't know if, you can get away with that in theater. I don't know necessarily if they did that in the movie because I haven't seen
it. Yeah, I feel like the ending kind of came out of nowhere for me in the movie, which kind of hurt it for me in a little bit. And it's weird, like when it's just the framing device and stuff. Like I can see how this was a stage play, but when you get into like the vignettes and like the actual like horror shorts, it feels a lot more cinematic. And it's like surprising to me that this was based on. Like I didn't know it was based on a stage play until you told me like 20 minutes ago.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, right on.
So, but yeah, that is Ghost Stories, and I think it's worth checking out if you like horror. Like, there's some solid horror stuff in there. And then finally got one more movie to talk about. It's a Netflix original, so we're coming full circle with this.
We've done it.
And this is the new movie from director Jeremy Saulnier. Mike, I know you've seen this too. It's called Hold the Dark.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think this movie, I have conflicted feelings a little
bit.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, I'm curious, Mike, what you enjoyed it, right? But you got to see it in a theater, right? We actually didn't talk about this in the podcast yet, and I don't know why. Like, it must have slipped our minds or whatever. But you saw this in the theater with Jeremy Saulnier there doing a Q&A, right?
Yes. Yeah, I saw this at the Brooklyn Alamo Draft House. They did a special one-night screening in a theater with a Q&A. I think I was sitting, like, two seats down from his mom, like, by accident. Like, I had no idea. Yeah, it was kind of neat. Yeah, so it was, I had a very different experience than you would have had to watch it on your TV alone at home.
Right, exactly. And I think this movie looks beautiful. It's about Jeffrey Wright. He's, like, a wolf hunter, and he's being hired to find this woman's child who was taken by wolves. At the same time, Alexander Skarsgård is coming back from war, and it's kind of like parallel stories between the two of them. And I think it looks great. It has solid performances. And I think it's kind of very reminiscent of movies like Wind River and The Grey. There's a little bit of that there, too. But, man, this movie just, like, did nothing for me. Like, I thought it was very slow, very boring. Jeremy Saulnier was the director of movies like Blue Ruin and Green Room, and I liked those movies, not as much as I think Mike
and
did.
Murder, like, Party.
And come Murder on. Party also.
Sorry.
You keep bringing that one up. No one knows what you're talking about.
Like some kind of murder party? I don't follow.
But yeah, so he did Blue Ruin and Green Room, and I liked those movies, but I don't think nearly as much as you did, Mike. But I know you're a big fan of those movies. And I feel like Hold the Dark is like a step down from Blue Ruin and Green Room. And so for you to like be a big fan of those movies and then enjoy Hold the Dark, like that makes sense. And then for me to like think those movies are pretty good and then me to not like this one, I feel like sort of makes sense, right? That's kind of like feels... Yeah. I don't know, but what did it, like, I also feel like watching it in the theater might have been a very different experience. Like, did you have, like, what was the vibe in the theater when you saw it?
Yeah, it felt like, I feel like this movie would definitely be hurt watched on a TV. It is very slow, it's atmospheric, there's a lot of lingering shots on the landscape and kind of just, like, people slowly walking across the frame in a long shot, like, you know, yeah, just trekking through the wilderness. So it feels very much like it focuses on how much they are part of the landscape and how much smaller they are than everything going on around them. So I could see how, like, you know, just alone, you know, in the afternoon on Netflix, this would be boring. You know, not that that is how you watched it, I have no idea. But, you know, like, I could see someone putting this on like that on a Saturday afternoon. And, like, not enjoying it. But on a Friday night in a packed theater with a director there on a giant screen, like, it was a very different
atmosphere. Right,
like, where everybody's taking it seriously.
Yeah, everyone was kind of there, like, to experience this movie. So I loved it. Well, maybe not loved it. Loved it's a strong word. I, you know. But I really enjoyed it. And I mean, I totally recognize what you're saying, though. It is all those things. It is slow and, you know, plotting and a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I think it just depends if you're on the movie's vibe or not. And I was not, which is a bummer. I will say there was a shootout about halfway through the movie that was like really, really good.
Do the wolves have guns?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, thank God. It's actually Wolf Cop.
Let me ask you this, because this is my biggest problem with movies like that. You don't have to say what it is without like spoiling the movie. Is there a payoff?
I think it would depend on which one of us you're talking to, probably.
It comes at night, right? Been on record as thinking that movie is garbage.
Okay, interesting.
It's atmospherically, I get it. I get what they're going for. I just felt like there was no payoff in that movie.
Okay, I would agree that there's not much of a payoff and it comes at night. Actually, you know what? I would actually disagree with that. I think I'm thinking back and it comes at night now. I thought it comes at night was pretty good.
What if I just hung up, like, it was no longer on the rest of this episode.
And with that, I take my leave of you, sirs. I think it has a... I mean, comparing it to In Cubs at Night, I would say it has less of a payoff than It Comes at Night does, which is probably bad news for you. But Mike, I think, would probably say that it has a payoff.
I think it does, but it definitely has a weird ending in that I'm not sure it ends.
I don't mind a weird ending. I just didn't like that the It and It Comes at Night was fear. That bothered me. I was looking for,
it was the friends we made along the line.
The way. Friendship was the treasure the whole time. You know what I mean? Indiana Jones 4. The knowledge was gold. The gold was knowledge. No, it wasn't. I want gold. I wanted to see real gold.
I think you wanted the monster and It Comes at Night to be the Crystal Skull, right? I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, or Bigfoot. Or Bigfoot. Yeah. Because, really, you know, at the Alamo, they play, like, supplemental footage before the movie, and they were showing a bunch of Bigfoot stuff in my theater. So I was, like, hyping myself up for, like a low-key Bigfoot movie.
And then, no.
That might have been why I didn't like it, was because I had Bigfoot expectations.
Yeah. You had big Bigfoot expectations.
Big parentheses foot expectations.
All right. Hey, speaking of weird endings, we got to move on and get into our featured review of Suspiria.
At the beginning, she gave me things. Perfect balance. Perfect sleep. Oh, she wants to get inside of me. I can feel her. Oh, she can see me.
When you dance the dance of another, you make yourself in the image of its creator.
I feel like I'm not even here yet.
The template's incredible.
One, two, three.
The way she transmits her work.
You have to decide, what is it you want to be for this company?
There's more in that building than what you can see, Doctor.
Dangerous people.
All right, that was from the trailer for Suspiria, the new movie written by David Kajanik and directed by Luca Guadagnino. It stars Dakota Johnson, Tilda Swinton, Mia Goth, Angela Winkler, Ingrid Cavan, Jessica Harper, and Chloe Moretz, among others. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Suspiria reads, "A darkness swirls at the center of a world-renowned dance company, one that will engulf the artistic director, an ambitious young dancer, and a grieving psychotherapist. Some will succumb to the nightmare. Others will finally wake up." I gotta say, that's my favorite plot synopsis for any of these movies I've ever talked about.
It's pretty great. Yeah. The only thing that would make it better is if it was like, and a psychotherapist, two of the three played by Tilda Swinton. They just throw that in real quick.
Yes. Anyway, have you guys seen the original Suspiria?
Hard no.
Okay, so Vin is not. Mike, did you end up getting the chance to watch it? I know you said you wanted to.
I tried to, and I didn't. It didn't work out.
Okay. So I saw the original Suspiria for the first time just a few weeks ago, actually, in the same theater in which I saw the new one.
Cool.
The indie theater near my house, the Roxy, was playing the original Suspiria in a 4K restoration, which I believe was making the rounds for a lot of theaters in the country. And that gave me a huge appreciation for just how different this movie is from the original. Because basically, Like, aside from the movie being about a dance school run by witches in 1970s Germany, like, that's it. The similarities stop there. The movies have almost nothing in common with each other. And I think it's
Tilda Swinton not in the first one?
She is not. Yeah. Shockingly enough.
Oh, right. I winked for anybody listening on the mic.
Right. As we know, Tilda Swinton is a chameleon, so she could be in the first one just playing, like, a child or something. anyway, I think it's good that they're very different. Like, if you're working with something that's already really good, like, I think the least you can do is go in just a completely opposite direction with it. And watching the new one, like, I was shocked that Luca Guadagnino had a movie like this in him. This is a guy who has spent basically his entire career making movies about beautiful people, hanging out in beautiful European locations. His last movie was Call Me By Your Name. Like,
was it really?
Yeah. So,
oh my God, I did not know that.
Really? So you didn't know who Luca Guadagnino is? You had not seen Suspiria? So you went into this movie basically completely blind, right?
I really liked the trailer.
Okay, cool. So coming into this movie, not having any preconceived expectations, what were your thoughts on Suspiria, Vin?
I was like, damn, this is long. This is very long.
Yeah, this movie is 2.5 hours.
I felt like we had been in the movie for an hour and a half. And when you said about mid-90s, how you were like, there should be more movie. I had, like, a similar thing, but I was like, I can't believe there's more movie. That being said, I was entertained. Like, I was never bored. You know what I mean? I just wasn't expecting, because I thought it was, like, going to be a run-of-the-mill remake. I looked up some stuff about the original, and I saw that it was, like, an hour and a half.
Yes.
you know, like, horror movies from the 70s. And that was jarring. But I think the thing that shocked me the most about this movie was that Dakota Johnson turns in a very subtle, very, like, well-done performance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
very impressed by her.
Yeah, I've actually been a big fan of Dakota Johnson for a while. Like, I've never watched 50 Shades movies, but, like, she was good on the...
What, you haven't seen 150 Shades of Grey? Which is what we should start calling the trilogy.
That's what the franchise is now.
The 150 Shades trilogy.
No, I have not seen any of those, but I think I became a fan of her. Like, she was in The Social Network for, like, a bit part. And it was a memorable bit part where she was, like, sleeping with Justin Timberlake. But then I remember, like, around the time the first 50 Shades came out, she hosted SNL. And I remember thinking she was, like, really funny on SNL. And, like, I thought she was really, like, really entertaining. And then she was in one of Luca Guadagnino's other movies, A Bigger Splash. And she was really good in that movie. So, like, since then, I've been kind of, like, keeping an eye on Dakota Johnson. And then just recently, she was in Bad Times at the El Royale. Where she was really good there. And then she was really good here. So I feel like... I think a lot of people are going to be, like, really starting to take her seriously as an actress now that 50 Shades is over and all that. And she's going to be casting a lot more stuff, I think. So, yeah, she's great in the movie. Mike, what did you think of Suspiria?
I was blown away by this movie. I saw this at the Draft House again. But it's really funny, Vin, that the first thing you brought up was the runtime, because I didn't know that this was a 2.5 hour movie. And I didn't until I checked my phone afterwards, when I was like, holy shit, it's almost 3 hours later. Like, what happened? Oh my God. Because I was pretty much enthralled for most of this movie. And yeah, I went in basically unsullied. I had seen the trailer once. I am, like, culturally aware of the original Suspiria. I had wanted to watch it, and it's interesting, Mike, that you saw it, the 4K you said was in English?
Yeah, well, the movie itself is in English, and I didn't realize that at the time, before I had seen it. It is an Italian, Dario Argento is an Italian filmmaker, but it stars Jessica Harper, who's an American actress, and yeah, the movie is in English.
That's bizarre. I'm so confused by that, because the version I've found it, you know, procured, was dubbed into Italian, so I went and found a different one with English subtitles. And then I was on the Wikipedia page for it, and it said that they filmed it with everyone just speaking their native language and then dubbed it into whatever language it was released into. So, like, the German people are just speaking German, and the Italian people are just speaking Italian and all that stuff. According to Wikipedia, maybe that's wrong. I don't know. In the original cut, the original version, not the new one.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So, I mean, who the hell knows? I didn't get a chance to finish it or, you know, get very far into it. But, yeah, and the Alamo, I have never been there to see just, like, a regular release. Normally, whenever Mike and I have gone, it's for, like, a special event or, like, you know, we saw Jaws or we go to the Cinema Apocalypse or something. But before every movie, they show, like, that half-hour pre-show thing.
Yes.
And they showed... a short documentary about the terrorists that's like happening in the background of this movie.
Okay.
and then an interview with the screenwriter talking about specifically the female choreographers that he influenced him in writing this movie. So they showed clips from all their stuff, you know, and it was really cool to see, especially one of them. I can't remember the person's name, the woman's name, but it was like silent era, like 1920s, almost vaudeville shit. Like, it was the weirdest thing. It was really creepy and bizarre, and it very much showed in this, which was really cool. So I guess that's a shout out to the Draft House, that as if they needed it.
but yeah. Sponsor us.
Yeah.
Please.
That's it. I was blown away by, Tilda Swinton, who could, of course she's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that from Dakota Johnson. I've never seen anything. Like, I hadn't seen the 150 Shades movie. so I was not prepared, and just everything going on in this movie, I was like, this is 100% my shit.
Okay, yeah, I figured you would probably like it, Mike. Yeah, I was pretty impressed by Suspiria too. I think I might have admired the movie more than I actually like really enjoyed it, but I definitely liked it a good deal. And it feels of a piece with like some more modern art house horror movies, like yes. Mother, The Witch. I think like it kind of feels of that kind of era of film. And by which I mean, I think general audiences are going to absolutely hate this movie.
Give me that F cinema score, baby.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Again, Dakota Johnson's very good. Tilda Swinton, MVP here, as always. I think this time she's playing three roles, including, like Vin mentioned before, the elderly man investigating the place. And Mike, you were Unsullied. Did you realize that was Tilda Swinton before you
No. I was like, that looks like a prosthetic, but I don't know who... what's going on, so all right, maybe this guy looks just like rubber. I don't know. I'm not gonna judge.
Credited as Rubber Man.
Yeah. The tire from Rubber was playing the old man.
That's who they got. Oh, I knew I recognized him from somewhere. What was interesting about the old man is that they credited his name as something that in German, Lutz Ebersdorf, which translates into swine town. Or Swinton.
Oh my god! I can't tell if you're joking or not.
No, that's 100% real.
Okay. That could be false, and he's just messing with us. I wouldn't put it past him.
To the old man from.
It's in German. It translates into boar or swine. Swine town. Swinton. Learn some German, you guys.
Wait,
come on.
What was her? What was her other role?
She plays Mother Marcos also at the end of the movie.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, which
that could have been anyone, honestly.
Yeah.
That was...
and that one actually translates actually to the hobo from Polar Express.
Yeah,
she does Latin for swine town.
But Tilda Swinton's amazing in this movie as always, and I think she does a lot of her best work with Luca Guadagnino. So that was honestly, I think she should probably get like some kind of Oscar like recognition for this movie. She's crazy good.
What was the last movie she only played one person in? Was it Doctor Strange?
I guess. Yeah.
Because Oakja, she was two people. In Snowpiercer, she was two people. Spoilers for any of those movies if you haven't seen them yet.
Wait, was she two people in Snowpiercer?
Yeah. She was somebody in that like upper echelon car.
Okay. Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about.
I'm pretty confident she was.
Okay.
Because that's the director of Oakja also.
Yes. No, I know. But yeah, so that's... Yeah, Tilda Swinton. Great. Like, very good. One of the best actors of her generation. So, yeah, big fan of Tilda Swinton. And also, just, yeah, I think this movie is very well directed. It's very well shot. I think the dance sequences are very mesmerizing, and there's a lot of those. Also, the score for this movie, really, really good. It's scored by Tom York from Radiohead. Who was doing music here, which is cool because the score for the original is also great, and that's from a band called Goblin, which is like this German kind of art house kind of music vibe in the 70s.
That's amazing.
It's a really good theme from the original Suspiria, if you haven't heard it. But this
yeah, it's a bum bum beedum bum bum beedum.
It's actually just
Suspiria. I was thinking about that the whole time the movie was playing. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh boy.
I've also been waiting to make that joke for where are we? 54 minutes.
I'm glad you were able to finally make that happen. but yeah, Tom York does the score for this movie, and I think he does a great job. And yeah, I think at 2.5 hours, this feels very long to me. You know, it's a story, but it kind of prepares you for it. I feel like opening on, or early on, there's a title card that says, "This is a story told over 6 acts plus an epilogue." So I was like, all right, we are in for it. But I knew it was 2.5 hours going in, and I'm like perplexed that you guys don't religiously check movie runtimes like I do, when I go into a movie. Because that's just to me, that's like second nature to like look up, like see what movie is playing, and like, oh yeah, this movie is 2.5 hours. Now I can know, so like I can pee beforehand or whatever. you know.
Well, I mean, if I have like stuff going on later that day and I'm trying to squeeze a movie in, for sure I'll check the runtime. But nah, I just let the wind take me most of the time.
That's wild, man. It's wild stuff. But yeah, but I think, you know, this, it does sometimes feel like the movie is just taking like a sweet time getting to the good stuff in a lot of sequences.
I didn't really care for Chloe Grace Moretz in this movie.
Well, she's like,
that might be a hot take.
She's barely in it.
And that was too much for me.
I thought she was fine. I think if I wasn't told, if I didn't know ahead of time that Chloe Moretz was in the movie, I might not have even recognized her. But I think, you know, this movie does like indulge in subplots that aren't like, it's not like readily apparent where they're going and why we're following them. Like the doctor and his wife, for example. But I think they all come together really well by the end. And that might result in them being more satisfying on a rewatch. I think this movie will play better for me on a second watch. But I did get a little like restless in the theater, like there when it was like, we're an hour and a half in and we're still like exploring the doctor's backstory. And I'm like, but I want to see what's going on in the fucking school.
Yeah.
It is almost as if the doctor is the main character. I think an argument can be made.
I mean, I would say that.
Yeah, or, I mean...
Oh, I thought that was going to be a way hotter take. I'm sorry. I thought there was going to be more blowback on that one.
Yeah, well, it's weird. I think I was conditioned to think that, like, because Dakota Johnson is playing the main character from the first movie. And so I was conditioned to be like, well, I'm sure we'll be spending most of the movie with Dakota Johnson. But really, she disappears for, like, stretches at a time.
So
a lot of time you are focusing on the doctor. Some other times you're focusing on the 27 characters that Tilda Swinton's playing.
I can't wait until she just puts out a movie like an Eddie Murphy style where she's just everyone.
Oh, I just hope they do another Dr. Doolittle, but with Tilda Swinton.
Norbit too, but it's...
But it's Tilda Swinton.
But yeah, I think that, Vin, I think you're right, though, because... Or at least the doctor's hour... like the audience surrogate in the movie, because the first scene is in his office, and he kind of is given the information we need to know about what might be happening, and then his investigation leads us to stuff. Like I feel like he, if he's not the protagonist, he's the like would be the narrator kind of thing in a novel or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
on.
I can see that. I think the look of this movie is also really interesting, especially compared to the first one. The original movie. It's shot very, like, cinematically. Like, it's shot, like, there's a lot of, like, brightness to it. There's a lot of, like, neon and a lot of, like, bright red colors. And it's very vibrant. And this movie is, like, the complete opposite, where it's, like, everything feels, like, muted. It's a much more, like, dark color palette in this one. So I think it creates, like, a different mood and a different feeling in this movie that I found pretty compelling.
It did create dread, like, really well.
Yeah.
Right out of the gun.
I was going to say, I feel like the one of the few things I like culturally know about Suspiria is that it is very vibrant, and I always see it's always like on one perfect shot and like all those
right.
Twitter horror aesthetics and like all that stuff, all those Twitter accounts where it's filmed a lot of almost like a stage play too, like it's a lot of just like flat backdrop background and the
yep.
people in front of it kind of thing. So I was like sort of expecting that in this. So I, not that I, like, you know, I didn't recognize any shots or have anything in mind specifically for them to like call back to or anything. But yeah, I was shocked sort of when this movie is like gray and brown because it's winter in West Germany in the 1970s. Like, yeah, I mean, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. And yeah, so there are other things going on in the movie. There's like a terrorist subplot going on where you kind of, it's not even like impacting the movie itself, but you're just kind of hearing news reports about what's going on in the background. And Mike, you said that you, when you were watching the pre-show, it showed like a documentary about that terrorist subplot and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It was basically like some anarchy kind of thing where they wanted to overthrow, you know, the pillars, the systems of power that were at B in Germany at the time, and
right.
they hijacked a plane, I think it was, and were killing the hostages, waiting for their compa- You know, it's kind of like what happened all the time, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, you know, release hour guys.
Yeah, but just the way you're describing that, that sounds like a real, like, that's thematically a kind of, like, parallel to what's going on in the movie. Like, that's exactly what happens in the movie. Like,
yeah, it's
in the actual dance school. So I think that's a kind of a really interesting, like, thing to have going on in the background of what's going on in the movie. But should we get into spoilers for Suspiria, guys, or do you have more to discuss beforehand?
I think we can do spoilers.
Then let's do that. Let's move on to the spoilers for Suspiria, starting right now. All right, spoilers for Suspiria, starting right now. So, boy, the ending of this movie is pretty fucking bonkers.
Woo! When did Mandy get in this movie?
They let the devil in.
They did let the devil in. Indeed, they did. So in this version, and this is very different than what happens in the original movie, Susie, in the original movie, Susie kills Mother Marcos and destroys the school, and that's it. She, like, leaves.
Who, isn't Mother Marcos also Mother Suspiria in the first one?
Yeah, there's only one witch in the first one. There's a coven of witches, but there's one, like, head witch, and that's Mother Marcos.
Yeah, but isn't, sorry, I don't mean to harp on this. I read, like, a synopsis of the first one after I saw this one, and yeah. I was interested that, because in this one, it's a big thing that Mother Marcos isn't one of the original three witches.
Right.
But in the first one, she is.
Yes. Yeah, and it's basically, like, it's the final, like, the first one's, like, that final boss fight with Susie and Mother Marcos, and she kills her, and then the school gets destroyed, and then she leaves, and, you know, the movie ends. But in this version, Susie is actually Mother Suspiria, and then she kind of sucks up the life force of Mother Marcos, and then turns out to be, like, an all-powerful super witch, basically. And then she kills a bunch of people, and the naked people are dancing, and there's fire, and it's a wild ride.
Yeah, and they're all covered in blood. It's crazy.
Yeah. So what did you guys... I'm curious how you guys reacted to that ending. Like, were you just kind of, like, blown away? Or were you kind of just, like, watching it and being like, what the fuck is happening? Like,
kind of both?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of both. I was not expecting that to happen at all. When I loved how the shots with, like, the demon in them, or the devil, whatever that was, were, like, blood red, and then they would cut, like, to the other coverage, and it was still in full regular color. I love that. That's one of my favorite things about this movie, like, how technically beautiful it is. Like, there's so many weird camera movements and beautiful framing and all that stuff. So I was in, you know, I was mesmerized by a lot of that stuff, but I was not prepared for blood orgy at the end there.
Oh yeah. I was still trying to process, like, her thought, like, process of killing, like, what was actually happening on screen, not, like, on top of being mesmerized by it.
Yeah.
And I was able to pull in, I was like, all right, so she's killing all the people that support Marcos. Got it. Cool. I just, like, damn. It takes a lot for a movie to make me feel as much as this movie did.
Okay. Yeah.
That's not even, like, about how good it was, which it was very good, technically. Yeah, you're 100% right. But just, like, I was so moved by it in not necessarily positive ways, but, like, I still felt very strongly, which is good.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, there's a lot to unpack in that final scene. And even just, like, on a visual level, it's like, holy, there's so much happening. At once. And then on a thematic level, I think it works even better. It's a really, like, strong ending, I think. And it kind of makes the previous, like, 2 hours and 20 minutes, like, feel like they were worth it. And I was enjoying that first, like, 2 hours and 20 minutes, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of really good stuff there. But it all kind of comes together in that, like, one, like, huge sequence. And it's like, okay, this is the shit right here. Like, this is what we're working towards.
The moment my stomach dropped was the moment the... old man and his wife, which, like, that should have been the tip-off, which I believe was the actress from the first movie, right? Was his wife?
Jessica Harper, who plays the main character in the first movie, yeah.
Yeah, which, that was neat, because she was in that pre-show thing that I recognized her.
Cool.
So, once again, shout-out to the Alamo. but when they're walking down the street and he looks up and he realizes they're in front of the dance troupe, like, house or whatever,
and
the building.
The one woman just runs out, and goes,
well, like, right before that, yeah, when he looks up and he like, walks away and his wife, like, steps out of frame, I was like, oh, no. And I was like, shit's about to hit the fan. And then it, like, is silly for a second.
Like, well, that's what I didn't understand. I was like, you guys are witches. Like, I've watched you enchant other people in this movie successfully. Why not just do that to this gentleman also?
Because they want to torture him.
Yeah,
women tell him the truth, and he doesn't show them pity, and or whatever that line is they say to him.
Oh, yes. Believe women.
Yeah.
Basically. The one moment that the movie got hyper political, which is, you know, awesome because you should believe women.
But yes,
I just wasn't expecting it in the middle of this supernatural dance horror film.
Yeah,
for it to get like have a political, like a real message.
Yeah, and it is like a very thematically complex movie. I think that's definitely a factor into it for sure. I think it deals a lot with themes of motherhood and themes of like women not being believed by men and that kind of thing. So there's definitely a lot of stuff going on there. I will say the scene that like really sold me on the movie early on, because I was pretty into it like from the get go. But I think it's like an act two, where the scene early on where Susie starts dancing in the studio like for the first time, and and Olga has just left and she's like downstairs in like the all mirror room, and then suddenly her body starts like contorting and she gets like thrown around all over the place because of Susie's dance, which is like upstairs. It was pretty fucking wild.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable calling that the most disturbing scene I've ever seen in a movie. Like when she like pees, poops, like vomits, bleeds. And I think I read something about like that the idea there was supposed to be spinal fluid also was coming out of her.
Yeah, it's rough, man.
It's very funny.
Yeah, it's very funny. It's very graphic for sure.
Yeah. That's one of those moments where like there's just stunned silence while it's happening in the theater.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. And then later on, I think you see Olga later on with like Patricia, who is Chloe Moretz's character, and they're like just completely disfigured and like horrifying and like it was gross. Yeah.
I knew that was Chloe Moretz, and I knew one thing about this movie. And I'm not trying to pivot away from what you're saying. This plays into it. It visually, as pretty as it was, I found a lot of it very uncomfortable to watch at times.
Sure,
and I felt like they, for the first act or so, tried very hard not to show their actors.
Why?
Like, until Dakota Johnson shows up, there's a lot of very far away shots. There's a lot of shots where people aren't framed in, like, the focal points of the screen.
Yeah, and in Act 1, a lot of the movie is Tilda Swinton as the old man, so you don't actually know it's Tilda Swinton. And Chloe Moretz she looks very different. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the hair color is different, but
yeah, her hair is like short, and it's in front of her face most of that scene.
Yeah,
you know what gave it away that it was her though is that she says the C word at one point, and that's like a weirdly Chloe Grace Moretz thing to do in films. I feel like
you're not wrong.
Because of Kick-Ass?
Yes.
just Kick-Ass.
Just Kick-Ass too.
Fair enough.
And Kick-Ass probably too. Neighbors too, which I have definitely seen.
I have seen Neighbors too. I don't remember if she says the C word in that, but if there is a movie that she says it in, it's probably that one. but yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, I think Chloe Moretz is pretty solid in the movie. Like, she's only in like a very small, like really just in that beginning scene. And then like towards the end, you see her like disfigured and like weird and shit. But
The opening scene was just very jarring. I think on a second viewing, like knowing what's, like you were saying, knowing what's like what's the end game.
Yeah,
I think I would appreciate her performance more.
Yeah, because that's the thing. A lot of the movie is kind of slowly paced for a lot of its runtime, and I found it like pretty engaging, and I enjoyed that slow pace. But at the same time, it's like, all right, we got to get to the witches or something. Like,
something's got to happen.
I need to see somebody disfigured every once in a while, and the movie like delivered on that. But like when I was watching it, I was like, I don't know if it's delivering on that as much as I wanted to.
You're like, oh man, I really hope somebody gets brutalized. Oh no, I take it back. Just wait a couple more minutes. You're like, oh god, I could really use some more hyper violence in this thing.
Oh, there it is. Okay,
there it is. Satisfied.
And then like near the end, just like I love it, but does it have enough Tilda Swinton? Like, I feel like if she showed up with one more person, I would really be sold.
They really should have done a Nutty Professor 2, the Clumps type situation with with Tilda Swinton. She should have played everyone. It would have been great. But yeah, I also want to talk about the ending of the movie, like the very end, the epilogue, where Susie erases the doctor's memories of his wife at the end. And I'm curious what you guys thought of that. Like, she kind of gives him her whole life story. I guess they were separated during the war, and she was sent to a concentration camp. And all that, and so she tells him the story of how his wife died in a concentration camp, and then she erases his memories. And it's like they spent this entire movie like torturing the dude, and then they're giving him like this one last like kind of like sort of closure with his wife, but also tortured knowing what she went through. But then they're gonna erase his memories, and I'm like, I don't know, like what's the deal with that? Like, what do you guys think?
I think they say something earlier on in the movie about needing somebody to bear witness, like, to what they're doing.
Right. That's why the doctor's there, yeah, for the final ceremony thing.
Okay.
Ogling all those young naked women.
Or, like, being tortured, you know, one or the other.
Well, yeah. You know what? They kind of balance out, you know? It's like, sorry, we can cut all this out. actually, play it twice. It was his fault that his wife got caught, right? Like, because he didn't believe her that the Nazis were coming. Or was he a Nazi?
I don't think he was a Nazi. I think he didn't believe her. Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Because there was the thing at the end that said Aryan Papers, and I didn't, like, catch the name on it, but I also didn't know what that meant.
I think it was he didn't give his wife her travel papers. That's how I took it. Like, they could have escaped together, but they were separated, and she couldn't get the papers because he had them.
Okay.
So he had he's, like, staring at the travel documents with his wife's name on it.
Oh.
So, because he talks about, she tells him, Dakota Johnson tells him, we always need guilt or something along those lines. Did she erase his wife's memory? I know she erases the witches and all that stuff.
I think she erased everything. Yeah,
yeah, okay. She erased everything because he didn't even know who Sesame or whoever, whatever it was.
Right.
But, yeah, like, also, isn't that woman just going to tell him about his dead wife again, like, immediately? Oh, who am I? Oh, you're this guy, and your wife died in the Holocaust.
Right, that's going to be different, because he's not going to have the memory. He's going to be told that somebody, that he is who that is, or whatever. What I think is interesting about this movie, though, is that this version of the story sort of creates, like, this whole mythology that the original, like, really didn't hint at much at all, or just barely it. And according to, like, Luca Guadagnino, he says he wants to explore it more. Like, he might do, like, a sequel or a prequel or something. Like, something.
Well, the original was part of a trilogy.
Not like a direct trilogy. Like, it wasn't a,
In terms of the mythology of this movie, it's kind of a trilogy. That it follows the three witches. Superiors,
Marcos,
the other two.
And Blanc? Is Blanc the other one? Or
no,
it's
neither of them. None of the witches in this movie, except for at the end when Dakota Johnson's like, I am Mother Suspirior,
right.
Is none of the, like, the main three witches are in this movie up until that point.
Okay, because that's when Marcos is there and Suspirium is there.
Yeah.
And then who was the other one? I don't remember the other one.
I don't remember.
There's two other names. I'll look them up. You guys talk amongst yourselves.
I thought that was interesting, though, at the very end. Like, I don't know how that plays. Is that like her taking pity on him? Is that her, the final torture, like removing the memory of his wife? Like, I don't know how that works out.
I think she views it as a positive because she says the line where she's like, we need guilt and we need shame, but, like, you've gone through enough.
Yeah, that's what it is, I think.
Yeah.
And the other witches are named Mother Tenenbrarum, Mother Lacrimarum, and Mother Suspirium. Suspirum.
Okay. Gotcha. Suspirum.
And Mom.
And
Mama S.
Mama S. Big Mama S. So Mother Marcos isn't, like, one of the original witches or whatever, but she's kind of like...
She claims
that she is.
Okay. I think I see what you're saying. So Suspirium had to destroy her for that reason or something.
Yeah. She was, like, blasphemous, almost.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I see there. So you kind of get, like, a picture of, like, a larger mythology there, and that's kind of hinted at throughout the movie, right? You have, like, the voiceover bit where it's, like, you hear, like, the meeting where they decide whether Mother Marcos or Mother Blanc will be the leader of the group or whatever, and that kind of thing. So there's, like, a lot of history in the movie. That is hinted at and told to you, and there's a lot that could be explored in further movies, and Guadagnino says he might want to do that. So, I mean, what would you guys want to see more Suspirias? I don't know how you would pluralize Suspiria.
Suspiria, but, like, with an S and a dollar sign next to it. Suspirias. Yes, well, definitely would love to see more of these.
Yeah. Did you guys stick around until the end of the credits by any chance?
Yes, I did.
Not.
I did. Yes.
What is that?
I heard she just didn't. Dakota Johnson just show up again.
Yeah, it's Dakota Johnson. She's writing something on a wall, but you're facing her, so you don't see what she's writing on the wall. And then she kind of looks at the camera for a bit, and then it cuts away.
Yeah, and she like, walks out of frame.
Like, check, please.
Waiter, I'll have 2 rupees, please.
Man, that was really a Suspiria.
Nice, Mike. Also, what did you guys notice in the very beginning, but at least in Act 1, when Dakota Johnson walks down the subway platform, the stop sign is Suspiria behind?
Yes, it is. I did notice that.
Or the station sign is Suspiria?
Yes.
What?
Yeah. Maybe there's hidden Suspiria throughout the movie, the hidden Mickey Mouses in Disney World.
Yeah. Is that that thing in True Detective Season 1 where they drive past a school where the guy that ends up being the Yellow King is riding a lawnmower and it says Notice King or something on the sign?
Right.
Were we supposed to realize that she's Mother Suspiria from that?
Maybe that could be a really quick foreshadowing thing. That's not a bad.
I'm going to say that's what it is.
You know what? Let's put a quick pause on this. Go watch it again. Meet back up here in say 3.5 hours.
Right.
12:30 our time.
Yeah,
we got this.
Sounds good. I don't know. Anything else you guys wanted to bring up in spoilers while we're here?
Definitely got major David Lynch vibes from the dancing light that represented the devil or whatever that kind of travels, follows Dakota Johnson's character through the dance academy.
Yes. Yeah, there was definitely a little bit of that. I feel like that was the same thing was in Twin Peaks The Return, actually.
That's
exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And the nightmares, that Blanc sends her the very disturbing, terrifying nightmares.
Just quick edits of crazy shit happening all at once.
Yeah.
Did you guys pick up on in the movie that the thing with her mom was that when she was a kid, her mom caught her masturbating and burnt her hand with an iron as a result of that?
Yep.
I swear to God. Yeah. I knew that obviously the mom burnt the iron, but I thought it was because she broke a mirror.
Because
I didn't pick up on the fact that that's was the reason behind it until I read up on it after, and I was like, what?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a sexual component to a lot of the stuff in this movie, actually. I mean, that there's that, and every time you see Dakota Johnson dancing, she's writhing against the floor.
Which was pretty great. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, it's definitely she repressed feelings and all that stuff. Growing up Mennonite and all this stuff versus Amish, and I mean it almost makes me feel like her mother knew that she was a demon because when she's getting the last rites. Right, there's a part of the horror. Part of the nightmares is her mother's dying, her mother's getting the last rites. She says my daughter is that which I smeared on the world or something. Yeah, which is one horrifying just as a phrase.
Oh right, yeah. She looks dead into the camera and she's my daughter is Mother Suspiria.
Yeah,
she looks dead down lens.
It's right there. My name is Luca Guadagnino, and this is.
Oh, you know what's actually interesting is Dakota Johnson also plays 2 roles in this film.
Yeah, I guess if you think about it that way, yeah, you could.
No, she literally does. There's another in the flashback sequences when the mother is dying. Or maybe it's after the mother's dead. It's present day, but when she's still home, there's a twin sister that you see, kind of her profile for a second. Yeah. And they got Dakota Johnson to play her twin sister for a second also.
Oh, wow.
She's pregnant in the shot. I read a lot of IMDb trivia. I don't have a lot of social activities planned.
But you don't scroll to the part where it tells you the runtime.
Well, after the movie.
Oh, after the movie. Okay. Got
Michael.
But with a dollar sign.
With a dollar sign.
Michael's with
you
a dollar
two are money.
That's right.
Damn. It's just a strong movie. I liked it so much more than I expected to. It was brutal. This movie was brutal.
Yeah, it's there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of graphic stuff going on. But I was a fan. I enjoyed it a lot. And Mike, it sounds like you were also a big fan too.
Yeah, I do have one weird complaint though. At that very last scene, where we've had all this very brutal, realistic, or practical violence happening, particularly the Olga scene, whoa.
Yeah.
That was crazy. I don't know what the fuck. If that person isn't a contortionist, I'm freaked out.
And they murdered someone. Yeah.
That they had murdered someone for real. It's a cannibal Holocaust situation. But anyway, For it to sort of just like that last scene to sort of just like devolve into CG bodies exploding, felt like really weird or incongruous with the rest of the movie up until the last 7 minutes.
And like some of the other people didn't stop dancing ever.
Yeah. It's because everybody's witches.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, of course. Also, that the monster was supposed to be death, by the way.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. To me, I was really just enjoying the chaos that was on screen.
I was, too. Yeah, it's a very weird, like, nitpick thing for me to realize and, like, be like, wait a second. but otherwise, that's an amazing movie.
I just wish they went into, like, the witch's power a little bit more. Like, the specifics of it. You know what I mean? Because, like I was saying before, how, like, they kind of entranced those guys earlier in the movie. But then she just charged at the feeble old man.
Yeah, I mean, I did really love, like, that. I appreciate that we don't really know anything about it, because it's sort of just, like, is movement, right? Like, they talk about, we see one of them open the magic door in the all-mirror room by just sort of, like, making a hand gesture. And, like, the big dance at the end, or, you know, the climactic dance scene is a spell, is what they're doing. And then Dakota Johnson messes it up by improvising a dance move, and everything goes to shit.
Right.
Is that what happened in that scene?
Yeah, it's not.
Sorry, like, I did not pick up on that. Like, I knew that she improvised the dance move. I just didn't. It didn't occur to me that that's why what's her name broke out of the trance.
Yeah, at the next scene when Dakota Johnson and Tilda Swinton are telepathing a conversation, which was really cool. She says, like, "Oh, I'm sorry, you know, for improvising or going off book," and Mother Blanc, or whatever, Madame Blanc says, "We brought that character upstairs to hopefully finish the ritual, which you messed up," or something along the lines. She says something, she sort of explains what, like, happened, but it's definitely not apparent in the dance scene why all of a sudden the trance ended. But yeah, so I don't know, I was into it sort of just being, like, a weird, nebulous, undefined dance. Is magic, kind of.
I love your jazz hands when you were saying dance.
I sold it in this audio medium.
For the listener at home. I do have one more point, if we have the time. I don't want to...
Yeah, go for it. Too long.
Blanc, like, cared about Dakota Johnson's character. I can't remember her name.
Susie.
Blanc cared about her, right?
I think there was an affection there, yeah, for sure.
Because it seemed like before she was like, oh, something seems wrong about this, she was like, hey, we don't have to do this.
Right. Well, I think
she's
Blanc
giving Dakota Johnson the out.
Yeah. Well, I think Blanc realizes that they need her. I think they know that either they know that she's Suspirium, or they know that she's some kind of powerful witch or can be used for their spells in some way. So she's trying to, like, nurture her to get her to that point, I think.
Mm-hmm. I agree that either she knew that Susie was Mother Suspirium, or that was her, like, selfishly trying to stop, because the whole thing is to get Mother Marcus to be healthy again, right? Like, this put her in that new body, was because she hates Mother Marcus, it seems like.
Marcos sucks. Of all the witches,
she's the worst. So it seems like her sort of, like, trying to last minute ruin Marcos's plan to me. I don't know,
but she had that whole thing where she was like, she's looking at Marcos, she's like, something's not right. She was sensing what was about to happen.
Yeah.
Like, as if it were for the first time.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Well, I think that might be a rewatch type thing. That might be one of those things you have to figure out as you're watching it again. Just one last thing, though. How fucking creepy was it when Tilda Swinton's head came off, but then they put her head back and she starts blinking again?
And then...
I mean, yeah, that's how decapitation works. If you just put it back on...
That actually got a huge laugh in my theater. Because then...
Did it really?
Yeah, because she like, lifts her head, and it, like, reconnects, and she, like, oh, blinks and turns, like, you know, moves her head again. And the woman's like, oh, yay, and claps, and her head disconnects again. And, like, everyone in my theater laughed. It was really weird. So, like, is she still alive, presumably?
I think
a weird witch way.
Right. So, I guess we'll have to find out the answers in Suspiria 2. To Suspiria, to Suspirium.
Suspiria.
Did you just cast a spell?
Suspiria harder. the search for Blanc's gold or something.
Yes, I'm in.
Anyway, yes, that is Suspiria 2018. It sounds like we all enjoyed it at the very least. Mike, it sounds like you were a really big fan. So there is that as well. So let's wrap this up, guys. Vin, where can we find you online this week?
At Vincent J. Craig on Twitter, at Vincent J. Craig on the gram. And keep an eye out. I can't really talk about this much, but the boy got cast in a movie with a speaking role.
Whoa.
Of
what?
The Screen Actors Guild variety.
What? Nice, that's amazing, dude. Congratulations.
I'm still shocked about it. It films in like 4 days.
Where does it
up
film?
Up in Albany.
Okay, cool.
Nice.
Yeah, congrats. That's very cool. Is there some name actors in there or anything that you can talk about?
I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, so once we are off the air, I definitely will continue to not tell you about it.
Uh-huh. That's very wise of you.
Yes, wink and wink.
Say, got nothing on me.
Yeah, and you were just in a movie too, right? And you said something, I think last time you were on the podcast, you were plugging a screening of a movie that was going to happen in November, and it's November now. So if
Slate yourself
already,
being color-corrected right now.
Okay.
I'll keep you up to date whenever the next time I come on, and presumably some other kind of devil themed movie.
Got it.
Anytime you can knock knock and let the devil in, Vin will be there.
If you guys ever decide to do the Black Coat Daughter, I will be on.
Is
in
it
a heartbeat?
Is it
review that movie from a year ago?
Knock knock, let the devil Vin.
Beautiful.
Oh,
I love it.
You're welcome. That one's for free, Vin.
All right, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find more gems like that at MD Film Blog on Twitter.
And you can find me online at M Smith Film Blog on Twitter, plus all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. You can also hear me every day on the radio if you're in Missoula, Montana, at 107.5 Zoo FM and Alt 101.5. Thank you so much for listening to Film Bookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriscio. And that is Vin Craig. If you are listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, subscribe, rate, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in a couple of weeks. We'll probably be back with a review of Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. And that's going to be a movie that we'll watch and hopefully enjoy. We'll see what happens.
Time will tell.
The Time Crimes tell. Of Johnny Depp.
Yeah!
Tilda Swinton. Thank you.
And you can check out our next complete works, where we'll be talking Nicolas Cage's role in 2013's DreamWorks animation opus, The Croods. It's coming up. Vin just got really excited about that one. I just saw his face, and that was...
I've never seen The Croods, but I'd love nothing more than to learn about it via you guys.
Yes. That is the goal. All right. Thanks so much for listening, guys. We are out.
That's funny you brought up the Alamo thing, the pre-show, because I'm going to want to bring that up about Suspiria.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did it have more Bigfoot stuff?
Weirdly, it was Bigfoot stuff.
All Bigfoot stuff. Who's running this thing? And it's like a guy who only takes blurry photographs.
It's just the guy in the Bigfoot costume from the Jack Links commercials.
Yeah, you look back at the projector booth and it's literally Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Just two big feet up on the rail, leaning back, enjoying his work.
But he's like got one of those like vests with all the fishing lures and all the pockets and stuff, and he's wearing a bucket hat.
Got a cooler full of Coors Light. Yeah. This is gold. It's a shame none of this is on the show.
Yeah.
It'll be, you could edit it in at the end, Mike. It's fine.
Yeah.
We're recording.